as big as a lion!
Welcome, coaches, to the Talking Split podcast. Once again, Rob Calder, manager of Coach Education here, joined by Basketball Development Officer Nick Mihai. Welcome, Nick.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks for having me back again.
It's always a line ball call every week, but you are around. And more to the point, you are available. Zoe Carr, welcome.
Thank you for having me. Again, two times in 1 year, Mihai. We've been allowed on a pod together.
Yeah, it's still February as well.
Yeah. Who's the best year in Japan at the moment? Jenna's not in yet, so here we are. But no, great to have you both back in. Coaches, thank you very much for listening along on the podcast. Obviously, you can leave a rating and review and send through any topics of conversation you'd like us to touch on a little bit, which we're going to get into a little bit today. So we've had actually a lot of questions come in over social media. So this will be one of the ones where it's kind of a bit of everything. I think we called this open scrimmage last time because it will go off on various tangents over the course. This might be like round two of open scrimmage. That was Nick's biggest contribution to the podcast and also the reason why you two almost never ended up on podcasts again together.
And I'm hanging on to it as well for as long as possible.
Badge of honour.
No, exactly right. Zoe, SDP camp on the weekend. Talk us through it. How did it go?
It was great. We had All-State camp in Bendigo. On Saturday and Sunday, girls on Saturday, boys on Sunday. And we had extraordinary numbers. The biggest turnout we've actually had, I think, since we started the camp, which was great. An army of coaches both days. The athletes were in two on-court sessions, and then the last session was with Darren McGuinness, and he went through some strength and conditioning workout for them. It's a bit of a, we do it almost every time we get everybody together, but do it as a bit of a refresher, but also see which athletes are ready, if they have been doing it, to progress.
Yep. They stand out pretty quickly when Durham's on court and it's like, that plank's a little shaky.
Yeah, it's like you're bowing in the middle. But anyway, and then we spent a little more time on recovery because we've kind of rushed through that when we haven't had time. So spent a bit more time on that and then they were off home. So it was a brilliant 2 days. The coaches were fantastic. Shout out to Dave Peters and Fernando Rios Rodriguez.
Nailed it.
Yeah, I'm always so scared to say his surname.
I can confirm it's not written down in front of her either.
Yeah, no, thank you.
Just say Nando. We all
Nando.
Got it.
Yeah, but I'd already committed to saying Dave Peters, so sure. I had to say his surname. Well,
there's a lot of Daves out there, though, to be fair, so you do need to qualify that one.
But only a couple of Nandos.
I know. They're dropping off like there is no tomorrow. Yes. Like, just be able to get my Portuguese chicken fix almost anywhere, and now I've got to do a little bit of work.
But anyway, they basically led the camp as the state development officers, and they did a phenomenal job. So massive shout out to them as well. But, yeah, the kids were fantastic. They were a little bit quiet to start, had a few issues getting standing between two lines and behind one line for the photo. But once we got past that, we're all pretty good.
So these are also the same age kids that are probably sitting for their learners fairly soon. So this fills us with a lot of confidence that staying between the lines may not go super well.
Drive during school hours.
That should be the first part of their test then, right? Yeah, exactly. Sorry, look, you can't go for your learners now. That's it.
Good. Was there anything that you noticed throughout the camp that's like, look, this is an area for players that we think they really need to work on coming out of it?
I think from a conceptual perspective, understanding when basketball should override and when, you know, yes, there's a space there for a reason, but if you cut into that space, the cut that was actually supposed to come now has validity and all that sort of stuff. So sort of reading that secondary action of the spacing, why it's there, and, you know, who should have right of way. But from a conceptual perspective, this camp was probably far further ahead than any camp we've had with, you know, understanding our lane running rules, our defensive transition rules, our, you know, even just our system of play, which was great because it meant we could jump on the court and play quicker. And when you've got such big numbers, you know, you're in 5-on-5 most of the time. So, That was really pleasing. But, yeah, getting that, you know, we're still trying to break out of that, you know, finding the blend between breaking out of the A to B, B to C, C to D, but also, you know, we can't be all free play either. So it sounds confusing, but they're getting better, but we're just not there yet. But nor should we be. We've, you know, especially for the under 15s that were there, they've done one term of SDP or one block of SDP. So they're coming along really, really well, and a credit to the coaches in the regions and at the hubs that are doing the work with that. But, yeah, more of that decision-making within gameplay, I think, still needs to continue.
Can you explain conceptual as well? Like conceptual offense and things like that? Because I think it's a really important word that you used before that coaches at home should listen to. But I know what it is, but I'm just, you know, I don't want to tell anyone. So if you can just explain... You can just explain and break down what it is exactly.
No, she's broken out.
I always get one liner in per podcast.
So basically you've got almost like a skill set and then you've got concepts. And so with your skill set, that's the actual act of ball handling and dribbling the ball and those sort of things, if you use that as an example. When you talk about a concept, it generally involves more than one person. So it might be an on-ball screen, it might be a dribble handoff, it might be a flex cut, it might be, you know, all those sort of things that come along that involve a little bit more than just the one skill set act. You still have those acts within the concept, but it generally is more of a offensive or defensive schemed focus, and plays with, yeah, more often than not, more than one person are involved in the action.
Yep, like it. Nick, bit of a different weekend for you, obviously. Not necessarily STP related.
No, not really. So, long story short, my son was a little bit unwell and now he's okay. So that's really good to hear. Good to say. But I will say that the silver lining and all that, we were at the Royal Children's Hospital and I got to surround myself with some of the most amazing humans ever. Even aside from the amazing doctors and nurses and all that, there's also these volunteers that were walking around just handing out water to parents, things like that. They're just donating their time for nothing. So I'm not sure where to go, but if you want to donate, please donate to the Royal Children's as well. But basketball specific or coaching specific, it's really important to have your coaching network. And Rob, I remember our conversation that we had, and when Rob was talking to me, he was trying to help me process something that was quite difficult to watch, but from a coach's perspective. So he was trying to help me analyze it as a coach's perspective. And one of the moments was... the nurses were preparing me to go into the room with Orlando and I was going to see something that was quite real as well. And they explained everything to me. They were open and honest. They weren't brutal, but they had this conversation going, look, you're going to see this. It's not going to be pleasant, but this is why we need to do it. This is how it's going to help him, that sort of stuff. So it actually gave me permission to process it later. Still hard, still difficult, but it gave me a chance to process my emotions and all that sort of stuff. And when we were talking about it, Rob, it is exactly how you should have those conversations with parents, how you should have those conversations with players as well. Allow them to process it. They'll still get upset. They'll still get, you know, it's a difficult thing to go through, but it gives them permission to kind of deal with it. It's one of the biggest coaching lessons, I think, we talked out over the weekend.
We did. It's amazing how much, and I suppose being a parent relates to coaching a lot. Like there is plenty of times where it's like, oh, look, in this context, this is what it means, in that context, that's what it means. And there's a lot of stuff in between. And a lot of the questions we've had sent through today have actually been from parents that are like, look, here's the situation we're in. Can you just give us a hand with this? We don't really know who to talk to about this. What do you got for me? And now, there'll be some parents that have obviously got a better network or they've got better experience. They're on their third child, so it's like, hey, you know what? They're bulletproof. Like, they're fine. They'll figure it out. The worst one's a little bit more cotton wool as to what they look like. It's like, no, nothing can hurt my child. We get it. Like, from a different perspective, everyone's going to have a different take on things. But it is amazing that volunteers that give up their time, and obviously we relate it back to coaches, like how many coaches gave up their time over the weekend to go to STP camp and help out players, coaches and alike, you know, the volunteer space cannot be valued enough in this. And, you know, we are conscious too that since COVID, there have been a lot of volunteers walk away from the sport because they've realised, look, this takes up a lot of my time, a lot of my energy, a lot of my mental state to be able to give back. But we do need those volunteers. We do rely on them a lot in the sport. And, you know, it's not – I mean, Kent was in Bendigo on the weekend. Like, it's not just a, oh, I'll just duck down to the stadium and, you know, I'll be fine. Like, it's usually a
unless
couple of
hours. Unless you're from Bendigo. And then it was great.
Yeah. How many coaches did you have out there? Outside of, like, Dave Peters and Nando?
Yeah, so it would have been around about 30 over the 2 days. Wow. 30, huge. Even maybe even more over the 2 days. Yeah, it was huge.
Yeah, that's massive commitment. Yeah. Like, and for kids to be able to get that level of access to additional coaching, they turn around, there's always someone there that can help them with something. That's huge. So, again, cannot discount the amount of work that the volunteers put into all, to all spaces. Like, it's yeah, a massive effort from everyone.
You know you make me want to have my cold chairs, have my cold chairs, have my cold chairs. Come on now.
You know, the funny part is we only do this on episodes that you're on. And I feel like it's just to annoy you. And it's not done deliberately, but it just works out that way.
Yeah, I'm just looking forward to when we add the video element to Talking Split and the way you two dance gets shown to everybody.
I can't wait for everyone to see the look on your face when you dance.
It does go the other way.
You mean my face.
Yeah. Permanent dissatisfaction.
It's true. You always look at me the same, actually, now that I think about it.
So. On how that works. We do have a coach head out this week for Wodonga Wolves coach Ty Spearings. So Wodonga is one of the biggest and strongest clubs in the region, and at the recent Benalla tournament, Ty made the decision to mix up his Division 1 and Division 2 teams evenly, entering them both into Division 1. So that was done to assist in preparation for country champs. But for Ty to sacrifice the potential tournament wins with a strong Division 1 team for long-term player development is commendable and what we should all be striving for in junior sport. As a bonus, it made for an extremely competitive division with some very close games across the board for everyone. Ty's also one of those guys that always helps out in general with filming games as well as running around after his son and getting involved in FDP skills days and you name it. Excellent coach and a great human being. So I do enjoy hearing those types of things where it's like, look, we could probably go here and win this tournament, but what's that achieve? Like, we just get a nice little trophy at the end. We all get to say that we won it. But giving more kids an opportunity at a higher level, so you've got kids from a second team coming up and playing Division 1 that maybe haven't played Division 1 before or had the opportunity to, I love that. Personally, going into a tournament and using a tournament for what it's supposed to be used for, which is an ability to develop, I think is fantastic. So great job, Ty, in that sort of space. But as a reminder, if you do have any coach shout-outs, you are more than welcome to send those through to us and we'll throw them on the podcast. Zoe will roll her eyes, but she always looks at us very engaged when we go through the actual content itself, just not so much the jingle.
The dancing.
Yeah. Okay.
She switches off on the song and switches on when it's actually talking about the coaches.
Exactly right. So getting into what we were going to talk about today. So there's just been some stuff come through and to be honest, it's largely working with parents and it's parents that are asking questions of us because they are naive potentially to what goes on because they just haven't been in this space before. There's nothing sinister about it. It just genuinely becomes, if you are a parent in the sport that you don't know, who do you go to ask? It turns out us. And we'll do our best to answer as many of the sort of questions that came through. It's kind of a mailbag, but it's not a mailbag. It's one of those ones. So we might do this again, depending on how many we get through. And if there are any other questions out there from parents, we can obviously look at those as well. So the first one, how does a parent know what to focus on? My child has a dream, but I have no idea how to get them there. What is vital versus what is nice to have? Zoe, we'll start with you on this one.
Well, my first piece of advice would be that enjoyment is the most important part of all of it. If your child enjoys what they're doing, then they're going to put, by themselves, they're going to put more effort in and do the work that's required to get them to their dream. But sometimes that can be taken over, the goal or the aspiration takes over, and that's when things become less enjoyable. So I think really mapping out what are the goals, but also having a frank conversation too. Like if you've got a 12-year-old that says, I want to play in the NBA, you don't want to douse that.
Everyone has a 12-year-old that says they want to play NBA, WNBA. There's no question.
I still think I've got a chance. Yeah. Like
I just want a 10-day.
Never let go of it fully. Anyway.
But don't douse it. You want to try and encourage that because it's the worst thing you can do is go, that's never going to happen. But also you do need to have frank conversations with that, just because you set a goal and have a goal doesn't mean you get to reach it, and other things, making sure you find the joy in the journey. And so set those goals, have that conversation, and then what are your checkpoints? What needs to happen? And don't make them make the first team, make a state team, make this thing. Those things are outside of your control. What's within your control? I can shoot X amount of, you know, or make X amount of free throws a day. I can make X amount of this. I can lift or do a body weight session 3 times a week. I can eat right. I can, you know, sleep well. I can do all those. They are all completely within your control. To make those the checkpoints. And then if you're getting those, if your child is getting those things done, they may end up in the NBA. They may not, but they will see the improvement and the, I guess, where their game goes to that keeps that joy alive for them, because they're getting better, they're seeing more success. And, you know, again, I'm probably, this is probably where I lack in the high performance space. I find that basketball for me is a vehicle for us to make better humans. So that would be the path I would be heading down if I had a child with those sort of goals, rather than making the goals, you know, make this team, make that team, you know, be selected for this, be selected for that. Check off these controllables and always check in about the joy.
Yeah, it's a great point you make there, in that basketball is the vehicle. Like, great that they love it, love that they love it. It's fantastic, but it's not their identity. And you have to be really careful that they're not putting all the eggs in that I need to make this team because this will, okay, well, what if you do?
Yeah.
Like, then what? Like, is there anything more to this? Like, is it time for a new goal? Like, I would always work backwards from, okay, what do you want to get to? Okay, what are the things that you will probably need to do that underpin that, that sit there that you need to probably try and check off? Because I think a big part of what you're talking about is really just habit stacking too. Mm. In that, okay, if part of my my goal to get to wherever I want to get to is that I go out and make 100 free throws a day, and you go and do that, whether it be rain, hail or shine, like that's kind of where the joy is. Like, you know, when you go for a, I don't actually know this, I'm imagining, if you go for a run and it starts raining and you get through that and you just drench at the end, you sit there and go, gee, that sucked at the time, but it's pretty funny now and it's really enjoyable now. It's the same kind of thing. If you've got someone that has that sort of level of discipline, I guess, that wants to go and do that work, encourage it.
But that word there, discipline, is what's really important. If you are driving this, and this is what can tend to happen, and it's coming from a place of love and care because you know your child wants something, so you want that for them. So what I'm about to say will come across like it's being nasty. It's not. I know this comes from a place of love. However, if the parent becomes the driver of the goals, the driver of the behaviors, the driver of the habits, well, now all of a sudden that child is reliant on the motivation from the parent. The parent will cross the line at some point in terms of their relationship, and the joy goes. So one of the things that I thought my mum did really, really well with me growing up, when we had ITC, which is now SDP, she was happy for me to do it. She was happy to drive me as many times a week as it had to be at whatever time, but it was my job to wake her. So her thing was, I'm setting my alarm for work. If you don't wake me up, I'm going to sleep till my alarm. But if you wake me up, we go. So now it's on me. Did I actually want to go? Did I want to put in that time and put in that effort? And so she wasn't driving me, as in driving my habits, driving my she definitely drove me because we lived 20 minutes away. But I think that was one of the best things she could have done, because I took charge of what I wanted to do, and I think I only missed a session when they thought I had meningococcal once. Like, that was the only thing that kept me away, and that's where she actually said, you're not going. But, yeah, I think because of this want for our for our kids, and you know, they, you see that they have a goal and you really want that for them, that's when I think it can start to become a little bit problematic.
Yep. What about you, Nick?
Story time, Rob.
Oh, there we go.
You could tell I had it right here. I was like, don't forget it, don't forget it, don't forget. No. So when my, I think it was my nephew first started playing, I went up to Warwick Giddy, who is Josh Giddy's dad, and I asked him, I go, hey, what did you work on to get his skills? What did you plan out for him? And anyone who knows Warwick, he's he's a laid-back guy, right? So he turns to me and he goes, what do you mean? And I go, well, what did you do? What did you do at home and stuff? He goes, I just put it, he liked basketball because I played it and I put him in basketball camps. And I go, was that it? He goes, yeah. And he just started dribbling the ball. But it's a really good message there. He didn't push, especially in those younger ages, he didn't push him to achieve. He certainly didn't say you have to play like how I played in the NBL, because he's a completely different player. And he created his own identity and he created his own love for the sport as well. So I think it's really important to, if they want to make the NBA, to set goals and stuff. But in those early ages, just let them have fun and enjoy it. Let them make mistakes and help them process that part.
Yeah, and it's not easy, because exactly what you're both talking about, you come from an area where I don't want my child to be upset, hurt, disappointed, you know, but they have to be. Like that's part of it. You've got to build a level of resilience. You don't get to win everything all the time. You don't get to just roll in and be successful at everything. So I think it's one of those areas where, okay, is my child enjoying the sport? Tick. Okay, so you're
90% over, there.
Like very close to where you need to get to. Are they in a good environment for skill development? Now, as a parent, you might have a great grasp on the sport. You might have no grasp on the sport. Like that's okay. Either way, there's some resources out there that can help you in that path. Are they surrounded by good people? So do they have a good friend group that also plays the sport? Do they have a different friend group that's away from the sport anytime they need a break from not living, breathing, eating it, you know, 100% of the time every day? You know, are there people around that can challenge and develop in certain areas that can every now and again just push them along a little bit? It's like, actually, you're going pretty well at this. Let's try and add a little bit more to it and see what this looks like as well. And I think that's a big part of it, is that you'd never want to be like, you hear that that saying about you never want to be the smartest person in the room. Like, or if you're the smartest person, go to a different room.
It's really hard, isn't it, Nick?
It's a struggle, but no, I have to say, I've never felt that way, Zoe. So I've never really had that issue, but
it's a small room. There's only three of us. But it is one of those things where, you know, you want to be challenged in some capacity. So you don't want to win all the time. Like it's, you know, we talk about, and we've spoken about this at length on various other podcasts. Like, you know, do you want to be on the super teams that beat everyone, or do you want to be challenged? I want to be challenged. Like, I want to go and find different ways to try and do things. And, you know, there's been a whole bunch of stuff that's hit my socials about, you know, Road to SDP, and, you know, all these kids putting their own stuff out about, you know, I'm going to train daily and I'm going to post it there for everyone to see. And there's part of me that sort of sits there and says, you know what, credit to you for throwing yourself out there and doing it. There's another part of me that's like, when has this crossed the line now with this is no longer a goal and it's more about social media clout and following, that's your identity rather than, you know, what you're actually trying to achieve. So you have to be a little bit careful that it doesn't become the only thing going on in their life. You know, if you're like, hey, we can't come to this family event because he's got to go and shoot his 100 free throws, or she's got to go and make, you know, 15 turnout jump shots, maybe reevaluate how you're looking at this, but support it for sure. But you can't be the main driver, I don't think, is the difficult part. Yeah. Easy to say, not easy to do. I get it. Like, it's...
Well, and I think a point you made earlier was a really good one, about, you know, there's going to be disappointments. Not everyone's pathway, journey, whatever you want to call it, is the same, and none of them are linear. So there's going to be plateaus, there's going to be disappointments, there's going to be all those things where you think, God, I'm doing all this work and nothing's happening. That's normal, and be okay with that and just support them through it. What tends to happen a little bit is that's when panic sets in a little bit and we go searching for something else. What's the answer? What's going to make this work? Because it's not working right now. There's no quick answer. people don't become NBA and WNBA basketball players overnight. It is a journey, and when they have those disappointments, oh, again, support them through it, but also depending on what the disappointment obviously is, if there's a coach, you know, treating your child horrifically, well then, yeah, that's you've got to speak up in those moments. But if it's, you know, they haven't been selected for something, or, you know, sit in that moment with them and help them develop that resilience, because it
be
is...
be a parent too.
Yeah.
Like, that's one of those times where it's like, I know you're hurting. Yeah. Like, I'll talk to you here. I'm not going to sit here and give you all the answers. Like, we're just going to feel this one a little bit.
Yeah.
And they need to learn that, because it's what they need when they, let's say they make it to the NBA or WNBA, they're going to be moved around. Maybe their contract will last 3 days and they get sent back home. They're going to have to deal with it's not, oh, I've made it, I can relax now.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Well, they don't. They just got to be humans.
Yeah.
And then the real world teaches them that lesson when they're older and probably less equipped to deal with it, because it's something that's more important. That might be the job that you really wanted and you didn't get, and now all of a sudden you're that little bit older and you haven't gone through that process on something that, I'm not going to say doesn't matter, because I'm not trying to discard what they're feeling or thinking, but in the grand scheme of things, when you think about a global stage, missing out on a program or a one-off team or something like that probably isn't that high on the list of, you know, things in the world we should be worrying about. But if you let them sit in that and you let them, you know, find their way back, you know, and you help them with it. I'm not saying, when I say let them sit in it with them, don't just leave them by themselves, but, you know, help them through it. But we're going to have far more resilient athletes that have far more of a chance to actually reach their goals. But the problem is, at the moment, we're seeing less and less resilient kids. Something goes wrong and...
toys out of the car.
Oh, my goodness.
Is it because, though, and I don't really have a lot of advice here, so hopefully you guys can chime in, but is it because it's compounded by the stuff they receive on social media as 100%. Well?
Absolutely.
That's got to be the thing that's hurting the adversity.
Yeah, 100%. Status has to play a part in that.
Like, getting dunked on these days. I've noticed in under 18s, like, kids were scared to rotate on defense because they didn't want to end up in a highlight reel.
Well, I was watching something the other day. They were talking to Alonzo Mourning. He used to play for the Charlotte Hornets, Miami Heat back in the day, and he was one of the best shot blockers in the NBA. And they're like, did you ever fear it? He's like, not once. And that's such a shift in mentality. Yeah. And look, to be fair, it's a different era. Like, you,
Will Magne.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is one of them. Blocks shots left and right, challenges shots that you think, what are you doing?
Yeah.
But he gets them because he doesn't care if he's dunked on.
Yeah. And you've got to put yourself in that position.
Yeah, it's
ultimately
a different...
you'll be on the post still.
Yeah.
Like, and whether you're on the good side of it or the bad side of it, whatever.
But it's easy. It is easy for me to sit here because I didn't grow up in this era. I didn't have these, you know, so it is so challenging. I don't envy anybody having to not only grow up with these sort of things around them, but also parent somebody growing up with these things around them. My heart goes out to all of you that are trying to navigate this. But we talk about basketball's not your identity. Validation at the moment is coming from likes and comments. And
external.
Yeah. Instead of, no, I'm all right. And it's actually something recently I've kind of really flipped on. I talked a big game. I always thought I didn't care about what people thought or what they said, and I did. And I'm in a place right now where I really don't. And it might be a bit dangerous, but
yeah, Rob, you're doing okay, mate.
He's doing that that hand gesture that they teach for when you're in danger. Yeah.
It's a fair old flashing light.
No. But I've been so much happier since then, and I've had people still call me the same names, still write the horrible emails or have the horrible phone calls, you know, saying that I've ruined their child's life and all this sort of stuff. And it still gets to me, don't get me wrong, but it doesn't ruin my week the way it used to. because my validation doesn't come from external anymore.
Throwing out a challenge to some people now to fire off an email that might impact your week a little more.
There's no need for a challenge. We've so got we've got combine in a couple of weeks. It's coming like a freight train.
Step it up a notch.
But no, it is. It's and so that's me as an adult, right? Who's just come to terms with that. Now put it in the in a child, in a teen whose brain isn't completely developed. They're still in adolescence.
Dealing with school level
dealing
stuff.
Dealing with school.
Relationships.
All of it. Yep. Trying to navigate all of that. It must be horrible. So anything, I don't have the answers. It's one of many reasons I've decided not to have children because I can't imagine going through this and how to manage that. But I would advise if there's anything that, you know, your child is struggling with or there is no it is not weak to seek help. It is not weak to ask somebody who is qualified. That's definitely not me. But someone who is qualified who can help you navigate these things and give you your child in particular some strategies to navigate that, to find that place earlier in their life. I wish I'd found it earlier in my life.
Well, maybe it could be similar to like we have coaches that we call each other and maybe it's parents, right? Like parents who have kids of the same age. Mm-hmm. Hey, look, I'm going through, or maybe a little bit older even. Hey, look, I'm going through a little bit. Do you have any advice?
You've just gone through this 2 years earlier.
Yeah.
What did you do?
So maybe it's just having a little group to kind of discuss it would be the answer.
Mm.
Because, you know, like we don't, like that's a very big, we've opened a can of worms with that.
Right.
Yeah. Well, because I think it does, there's a bit of a, like it's almost a stigma around saying, "Hey, I don't actually know what to do here."
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not sure how to navigate this. Or
well, now as an adult, you want to have the answers.
Yeah,
but that's the reality of it. Like kids are expected to not know. Like they're still coming to terms with a lot of things going on in their lives, whereas you almost want to be, I can solve problems for you. And if all of a sudden they can't, they feel that just as much.
And it's your child, right? Yeah, so you really want to fix this for them. Like, you know, because that's your job as their parent is to, you know, to fix these things and make sure that they, you know, they set off in life the right way, etc. So the feeling when you couldn't do that must be horrible. Like it must be. And that's why I'd really like to try and change the, I guess, the narrative on that of seeking help. And when I say seeking help, I'm not saying put your child in therapy five times a week. Yeah, that might not be necessary. You know, we've had athletes go and see a brilliant sports psychologist that we've got, a contact that we've got, who's seen them once or twice and then, you know, it's just enough. And then they, you know, if they start feeling that their strategies are, you know, wearing off or they're not doing as well, then they just have a little like almost tune up. But also from a parent perspective too, to give you those strategies as well, because there's no book on this. There's never been a book on, like, I mean, there's millions of baby books, don't get me wrong, but there's not really a book on how to raise kids.
Nick just nodding his head feverishly.
I've read most of them.
Yeah. But, you know, you might have 10 of them, five say one thing, five say another thing, and what to believe and this, that and the other.
And the exact situation is not what's written in the book.
It's like not
there's more information.
Exactly.
Yeah, for sure.
Now add, because those books were probably published 15 years ago, now add all the different things that's constantly happening in an evolving world. So, a bit of a rant, I apologise, but I would really encourage more parents to seek some kind of help or support because it's a tough job, but we do need to get back to a place where young people are more resilient and things like maybe not making a program or a team aren't going to send them into this shame spiral that we're seeing at the moment.
Well, and credit to the people that do put themselves out there. It's like, hey, they have goals and they're open about publicising them because they are putting themselves out there for potential ridicule if it doesn't work out. So for them, like, this is the danger though. If it's all into, I have to make this so that people don't feel worse of me, that's probably not a healthy way. Like, if it's, I'm going to put it out there because, you know, if I can see it, I can achieve it, and I can dream it and all this sort of stuff. But it is a different world. It's like, well, okay, what if you don't? Like, what are the support structures around them if this doesn't work out, whether it be family, whether it be friends, whatever the case might be? Is it going to be toys out of the cot and, hey, I've missed out on this, so I'm not ever doing this ever again? Mm. Well, I would hope not. But by the same time, there's got to be some strategies in place. Goal setting is a wonderful thing, but also have some framework around, well, what if the goal is not achieved, or if it's not achievable? What does it look like in that sort of world? And we've kind of answered one of the next questions I had, which is, how do I motivate my child without being one of those parents? And we've all seen...
That's a great question.
Yeah. All three of us knew exactly who that is. Yeah.
And look, we've all seen it. And this is the hard part. And both of you have touched on this. It has to be theirs.
Yes.
Like, their success or failure as a child that is just playing sport is not a reflection on you as a parent. What they do next is probably the reflection of you as the parent.
How they treat people.
Yeah, that's how the biggest thing.
You know, how they take instructions, yep. How they accept people into the group, how they, like, all that sort of stuff. Yep. That's a reflection.
So there was a kid, I went and delivered a CETA coaching course this morning. And, like, there was a kid that eyeballed me, like, straight at the end, like, shook, and it was like a handshake. It was, felt like I was, like, shaking hands with a bricklayer. It's like, it had some, he's like, thanks for that, mate. I got a lot out of that. That was really good. I'm like, oh, you know, thank you. And look, you never know when you're dealing with school classes. Like, this could be one way or the other. Like, I came into the office a little bit hot the other day on a school course that I had that didn't go quite as well, to be fair to say. But, like, straight away, it's like, damn, that was impressive. Like, you just walked out, eyeballed me, like, had a level of maturity about him. It's like, I don't know what's going on in your life, but credit to you. Like, that's impressive straight away that you'd walk up to an adult that you have no need. Like, he'll probably never see me again. He has no need to come up to me, but he did straight away.
Did you have a kick me sign on your back? Did you check?
Potentially. Like, it's... Yeah.
I think it's still there.
Yeah, exactly. There was someone that took a swing at me on the way through, but it's... But, you know, credit to them. They don't have to do that. Like, and so many young kids don't now because they're afraid of face-to-face contact or having to talk to people. But they won't come up and do that now. Like, I have so much respect for the kids that will walk up to the end of the session and go, hey, thanks, coach. And just, like, shake hands, fist bump on the way out the door. It's like, yep, love it. Like, straight away, that's a kid I want to keep working with. Like, so when you talk motivation, like, the motivation is to be a better person. That's the motivation for all of it. Sport is simply the vehicle that will get you there, but ultimately we want better people in this world. And sport is, for mine, the greatest vehicle. Like, if you want to go down, like, a solo sport path, that will teach you great discipline, it'll teach you sacrifice, it'll teach you a whole lot of stuff, that self-motivation, all of that. If you want to go into the team sport, a whole different range of things that go with it. You need resilience of how to deal with people you don't necessarily like, but you have to come to a common goal with. Like, that is, you know, how many people would go through uni and say, oh, you know, I'm going to get through this, and they get given a group assignment and they're like, oh, this is the worst thing in the world. Like, I've got to rely on other people to do their job so that I can get a mark. Well, welcome to the real world. Like, that, you're going to have to deal with people you don't necessarily like or get along with or whatever the case might be. But that's what we're trying to teach our kids coming through. So when we talk about how do you motivate your child without being overbearing, self-motivation. Ask the questions. Hey, did you get your shots up today? No. All right. And just let them sit on it. Mm. And it's like, oh.
Or when they get in the car and say, oh, I couldn't hit any of my shots. How many shots did you do during the week?
Yeah.
How many of your blocks did you get done during the week? Yep. And just leave it at that. Yeah. It doesn't have to become an argument or...
No, you didn't. Did you defend well?
Yeah.
Just ask the question. And that's all it has to... But that, for me, is probably where the silver bullet is. Just ask it. Mm. Like, they'll work it out. And if they don't work it out, that's fine. You can ask a different question somewhere else down the road that will maybe lead them to the thing. But, you know, if you have to be the person pushing them out the door to go and do stuff, that's not motivation. No. That's somewhat child abuse. So, you know, be very careful that you don't cross the line in that world. The next question we had, as a parent, what is the best process to raise a concern with a coach? So that's positional, court time, etc. Nick?
I knew I'd get it. Yes. from a coach's perspective, first of all, there's things you can put in place to make sure that you're not hit up straight after the game, because I think... that's generally a common mistake that I've seen over the years in junior clubs, is like parents go, I need to talk to you about, you know, court time or whatever it is. Like, emotions are high. There's a reason I'm really quick with the team. So establishing a, you know, book in some time, you can book in some time on this day and then we can meet there is a good process to start with. Sitting down with the coach is important, but I feel the player has to be in there. And I know that's really hard with the younger age groups, but it has to be. They have to learn too, because for me, I'm going to speak to the player, but if it's a minor, obviously the parent must be present at all times. Okay, so if and I'll make sure that the conversation is just about that player as well. So if you're coming in to have a discussion with the coach, mentioning other players as well will be shut down very quickly by most experienced coaches.
Without a doubt. And it's something actually, I was talking to someone yesterday about it in a work capacity. And it's like, well, you know, how often do you check in with managers and all that sort of stuff? And it's like, no, we're good. Like we sort of manage their own sort of things. And they're like, well, we've gone down the path of we're going to block out a 15-minute window regardless. And this is going to be your time. And it's up to you if you use it or not. You have my undivided attention in this window where I will talk to you about whatever, whenever, however. Up to you. Like, if you don't want to use it, just walk past and go, no, we're good, and just wander on. But at least that way you're not trying to catch people on the way through and you're almost like ships passing in the night of, hey, is this going to work? Is this not going to work? Can I get you for 2 minutes down? Look, not right now. It doesn't quite work. Like, I'm really big on, I'm happy to meet with a parent and player and all that sort of stuff. That's not a problem. Like, I feel like I've been around long enough now that I can navigate that. I can understand how a lot of younger coaches would be nervous about doing that and might need a little bit of help or support with it. But for mine, it's set out at the very start of the season. Look, I will catch up with you. It won't be straight after a game. For me, it's usually before a training session is usually when I'm going to try and chat to someone, just because there's an end point involved with that. Like, it's like, hey, this has gone on for a while, but we got training now, so I've got to go. So keep this on task. But I also don't like walking to meetings where I don't know what's going to happen. So for mine, it's, yep, I will meet with you if you request it, but I need to know what it's about. And that way you can keep it on task and it doesn't split off into tangents of, oh, but, oh, and this. No, this is not what we're talking about. We're talking about this. This is how we have to do it. As long as you do it in a non-confrontational manner, I think you're going to be okay. If you just shoot the text message or the email, whatever your coach has said, this is how you want. I want you to contact me. Hey, it's so-and-so, parent of so-and-so. Is there any chance we can catch you on Sunday morning? We'd just like a little bit of a chat about this. That way, you know what you're dealing with. You've given all the information out there. The coach can come in prepared, because if you walk in saying, if you've said, hey, can we catch up before practice? They've probably catastrophized that thing. And it's like, oh, this is going to be a bad conversation. It's actually about, oh, no, we've just got like dead practice on every third Sunday and they're going to miss that session. We just needed to tell you this. And you walk out going, God, I got stressed for nothing. Like, it's those sorts of things. So give them a little bit of understanding as to what it's about. Don't walk into that thing heated straight away and like, you know, I need to fight and fight and fight. No, you don't need to fight. Like, the goal is to come out in a harmonious situation where everyone is on the same page about what has happened and what's going to happen moving forward. That's the goal. So as long as you're open and honest with it and keep on task, I think you're in a good sort of spot there. Anything for you, Zoe?
I would actually say, you know, let's say it's a Friday night team.
Yep.
If you want to have a conversation with a coach, I would actually wait until after the weekend and ask for that meeting at the midweek practice. And this is completely selfish, but coaches are people too, and we make mistakes just like everybody else. And I like to think and I like to believe that in their heart of hearts, they're good people and they want what's best for all the kids that they're coaching. One of the things that I used to really struggle with when I was coaching, and I'd get that text message, say, on the Saturday afternoon to meet for practice the next day.
Just on that 24-hour window.
Just on the 24 hours. Yeah. And I'd be at a function, at a wedding, at a, you know, a birthday, at something like that, ruined. That whole night was ruined because all I was doing was stressing about what was about to come the next day. So I once had a parent ask for a meeting in the midweek. We had a really good discussion. Again, came at it the way both of you have said, and And then when we ended, I said, oh, I really appreciate you. I don't know if you did it on purpose, but I really appreciate you doing this in the midweek because, you know, I got to have my weekend or what little weekend coaches have. And it was on purpose because they'd been a coach as well. So it's, yeah, it's, I think being, you know, you want your coaches to be empathetic and sympathetic towards your child and towards you to have that conversation, then it also needs to come back the same way as well. And wiping out a coach's weekend because of you've shot off an angry text requesting a meeting the next day or whatever it is, that's certainly not going to have that coach come in to find – to have a solution-based approach to the meeting.
It's when – the emotions are high, right? At the end of the day, you're letting the dust settle a little bit. I mean, it's the very reason I don't do the team conversations straight after the game.
Yeah.
I'll see you Tuesday, shake the hand and go. Because quite often you, even coaches, like we're humans, we're going to say the wrong thing as well. Yep. So you might say the wrong thing in the meeting and I might respond to you and now it's gotten even worse and we could have settled it 3 days later.
Yep.
No, I really like that, the way of doing it. This is an interesting one. How should I deal with the parents in the stands whilst I'm trying to watch my child in peace?
Zoe?
It is one of the... like, this came through and I, similar to this, audibly laughed out loud. Like, it was brilliant because it's like, how many times, and I say this...
What you can do or what you should do.
Yeah,
yeah. Exactly. Like, it's... like, and look, we've all been in that situation. There are times where I go to games on a Friday night and I usually try and wait for the winter months where I can walk in with a hoodie, hat and usually the hoodie up so that nobody looks at me or hey, can we just grab a chat? No, this is not the time or the place. I'm here to either evaluate a coach, look at a player, whatever the case might be. And I try and put myself away from everyone and then all of a sudden people start sitting around me, not because of who I am or anything like that. They just, that's the spot in the stand that they want to go.
Lack of seating.
Yeah, it's usually what it is. And suddenly I'm penned in and I can't get out and I have no choice but to listen to some of the chaos that goes on in those stands. And it has been everything from, I believe that this coach was involved in the JFK assassination and, you know, the wild conspiracy theories from that to there was a mum in the stand that just sat there knitting the entire time and had no interest in what was going on in the game whatsoever.
Oh, I like that mum.
Was,
yeah, she
was
my, just, kind of
that's
parent.
My kind of parent. Yeah.
Like, was just sitting there like, and said, oh, I dropped a stitch. And, you know, I've got to go back and grab that one. Like it's, you know, I saw something online the other day and it was, I have zero interest if my child wins or loses the game unless they are playing against that obnoxious parent from the other team, in which case I have every interest if my child wins or loses this game. And it's like, yeah, this can be a little bit chaotic up in the stands as to what it looks like. And there was a great clip, which I'll play now.
And what I did is I put a player in a blindfold and put him at midcourt. And the parents had to yell directions to the kid on how to get to the rim and make a shot. And, of course, here's what's happened. A couple of them were yelling, go right, go right, go right. Two others were going, left, left, left. The other one was saying, turn around. And all of a sudden, the kid was so confused, he was nowhere near the basket. And halfway there, I said, stop. And I said, this is what they're hearing. One parent is yelling, catch, shoot it. That's usually the player's parent. Another parent is saying, pass the ball. That's usually someone else on the team who wants that kid to pass to his or her son. Another one is saying, dribble it. So who's the kid supposed to listen to? And what I, you know, people always ask me, you know, your son was a good player in high school, actually a really good player in high school, was a good player in college. And is now working for the Celtics as a scout in the NBA. But everyone used to ask me, how come you don't say anything during games? And the answer is simple, because I'm a parent, not a coach. I'll clap for Jake. I very seldom even ever say good shot or anything like that, because for that time period, I'm the dad, not a coach. His coach is his coach. So, and even when Jake would bring home some issues, problems, whatever, to me, I always say, well, what does coach say? Have you talked to coach yet? Because we have to learn as players that we play for coaches when we're in sports, We work for bosses when we're in the real world, and we've got to learn to communicate through them, not through a third party.
So really interesting clip. Mm. Like through, it literally came through as I walked in the room. I was like, oh, this is too good not to use.
Yeah.
But it's bang on the money. Like how many instructions are coming from the stands about what should be done and what shouldn't be done and why have you done that and, you know, admonishing other people's children. It's like, where do you even get off doing that? Like it's – so in answer to your question of how do I deal with it, I'd sit away from people. Like if you find that people are a little bit triggering at games and training sessions, don't go near it. Like that's not your world to be in. Like keep yourself in a good mental state, which is – sit away from them when something good happens, clap when something bad happens, oh, shrug the shoulders.
Yeah, it's hard because, again, you're in competition, right? So, you know, everybody's
– everyone wants to win.
Yeah, like, course. Or not even just win, but everyone wants success and whatever they deem as success. I think all three of us could probably, without trying, name five of those the parents at this particular parents written in about without even thinking. You're not going to avoid them. Approaching them probably isn't going to help either. In fact, it'll probably make it worse and cause conflict. I think all you can really do is role model the right behaviour, try and get as many of the parents in the group as possible to continue to role model that behaviour. And that's not just cheering for your own kid, but cheering for other people's kids as well. And hopefully out, you know, strengthen numbers, right? Like try and almost outweigh what they're doing and hope eventually, you know, there's some self-awareness kicks in and
you've got to think you're an outlier rather than that's the norm,
yeah,
I suppose. Yeah.
You know, if they're a friend of yours, maybe you could have a conversation away from the court, like away from the games and training and things like that. You know, drop the kids off and go get a coffee and have a chat there. But if they're just sort of you know them as another parent in your kid's team, really approaching that's probably not going to work. And yeah,
might be something you go to your club to, and sort of say, look, you know. Could someone neutral come into this? I don't want my child to have like a mark on them, so to speak, because I have a problem with another parent's behaviour.
Mm.
Can someone neutral come down and just give me your observations? And if, because I might be overreacting to something that's really not that big a deal, or there might be a bigger problem that someone else has to deal with just from a child safety perspective too. Because, you know, the last thing we want is a parent from row G throwing, you know, shade at a random 13-year-old, that's not fair either.
But most associations now do have a little bit of a procedure in place. So you should be just at least saying, look, I think it's out of control. And normally they would get someone to go watch that game and watch those parents as well. I've also had a parent that he was an ex-NBL guy, like a really great guy. And he came over, he goes, Nick, I can't listen to that stuff in the crowd. Give me something to do. So I just got him to video our games for us because he just wanted to stand away from him and just video because he's just like, you know, I just want to watch the game in peace. So just giving yourself a job, maybe you'll separate it as well. I had a parent years and years ago. I had a pretty good relationship with him as well. And he was coaching his son from the sideline. This is more from a coach perspective. And I turned to him and I just go, hey, mate, if you can't not coach your son, you can't sit here and watch the game. And he goes, yeah, Nick, I got you. I'll see you Sunday. And he left because he's like, I can't not do it. So I was like, I appreciate your honesty, though.
It's funny because way back I did have a parent had a very similar thing and it's like, hey, can you give me a job to do because I can't handle this? And same deal, gave him the video, which was fine until about like week 7. All of a sudden I got the video through and the audio was taken out of it. I'm like, what happened during
what did
this
you
game
say?
That you've looked back on and thought, hold up, I probably can't send that one through, which does happen every now and again. Like we've all sort of sat there and it's like, oh, geez, what are they doing that for? And it's like, oh, I don't really want the coach to hear that. And so you do have to be a little bit careful as to what it looks like. But again, I think it's modelling the right behaviour. And, you know, if people see the right behaviour, they will more often than not imitate that. It's when they see the wrong behaviour and it's like, that's bad behaviour over there. So I'm going to try and up my behaviour over here by being louder than that person over there. And it's like, that's not actually helping. You know, it's that whole eye for an eye, everyone ends up blind. Like, it's that kind of thing. Like, you've just got to model the right behaviour, I think. The next one was, I coach my child, I need help. That was it. there was nothing more in that one. Now
noted. Yeah.
Did that come through at like 5:25 on a Tuesday?
Is that my brother?
Right before domestic practice.
Or G. Like, me high. Yeah, it might be. Like it's look, very sympathetic. Like we are conscious that there is comfortably over half of the coaches out in the domestic land in particular, and near on 100% will be parents. That are maybe doing it under duress where it's like, look, I don't think anybody else will do this, so I feel like I have to step in. They might have some experience in basketball. They might have zero experience in basketball or have played another sport. They might have zero experience in anything whatsoever, but they are great people that just want to help out, all of which are very acceptable reasons to be a coach. If you do need help, there's a couple of things you can do. One, go to your association first. Like your club or your association will usually have something in place that they can say, look, go down this path. If you get completely stuck with that formal side of things like that, go and watch another team's training session. And it depends on what you're looking for. Like when you say, I need help, it's a very broad spectrum that you've opened the door on. If you're looking for drills, jump on the Talking Split YouTube or Instagram pages, because there are drills up there that will, if nothing else, not make your players worse. Will they turn them into revolutionary players? Perhaps, like it's, you know, a drill's a drill. It kind of depends on what you put into it and what your details are and those sorts of things. But there is at least content up there that kids will enjoy. It's fun. It's constraints. Like there's those sorts of things. And once again, big thanks to the Big Country Girls and their parents for getting them in early on a Saturday morning to come and film some of that stuff for the coaches out there. So it is very much appreciated. But go and watch other people's training sessions and just talk to other coaches. It's amazing how much you can pick up by just talking. It doesn't even have to be from your club. You might coach against someone on a Thursday night or a Saturday morning, and it's like, gee, I really like how they coach. Can you just grab a chat with them? Because coaches are by nature givers. They will give up their time to help you out if you ask for it. But most people are so fearful that they're doing the wrong job or a bad job, they won't go and give unsolicited advice to someone else because they're more worried about, am I keeping my own head above water? If you walk up to someone and say, hey, I really like how you coach, can I pick your brain for 5 to 10 minutes? I'd be shocked if you don't get a yes. And even if it's a yes, but just not right now, that's fine. There's other ways around it.
Maybe even find another parent coach, just going back to what we said before as well. Like maybe your issue with the help you want could be that you can't differentiate dad from coach or mum from coach, which is one of the most common things that I got feedback on when I was doing DOC work for associations, you know. So finding other parents that have been through similar would help with that.
Yep, and even getting one of them, like whether it be another parent on the team on your bench as an assistant coach, so that way it can almost be like, look, I'll coach the team, but can you coach my child? And I'll coach the rest of them, so to speak, just so that you do have that ability to still have a relationship with your own child. And you're not in that world where it's like, geez, I'm the same person telling them to do their homework, make their bed, back cut when denied.
And like they're often the most critical. Like they're so. Yeah. Like I had that 1 year. I had an assistant who was a dad, and I had to tell him, you can't coach your son. You can coach the other 9 players, but I'll just coach your son because you're so hard on him.
Yeah.
Like, and he cops it 10 times just because you're the dad. There's no other reason.
And it's amazing how often that happens, that I do find parent coaches are probably more critical on their own child rather than someone else's. Like, I think in all my years, only once have I had a parent say that was coaching their team, I want to give my child the MVP. And even then it was like, do you really though? Like, think this through. Like, do you really want to open the door for this? Like, this is maybe not like, but they are the best player. Yeah, you might be right. Give them coaches award. Like, give them something else.
Or
like,
vote on it.
Yeah, like, so find another way because it just causes problems. Most of the time I do find that the parent is usually probably more critical on their own child because, of course, what happens? If you're up or down by 20 points and you're just looking to roll everyone through and make sure everyone gets equal court time and you fudge the substitution somehow, which kid's going to get shafted? Their own. Like, it'll be their kid because it's like, well, I can deal with their parent. Like, well, you might not, depending on who your partner is, but there might be a couple of other different issues there. But
I cannot.
But, you know, that might be the solution to your problem. So we are doing a podcast in the future. We haven't got a date locked in yet where we do have a parent coach coming on with their child to talk about what that relationship is like and how it's going to look.
Awesome.
And just to give a little bit of a different perspective on that, because obviously we coach other people's kids, like, great people we are, but sometimes a bit foolish at times by committing ourselves to that. But, you know, someone that is a parent coach that can give a little bit of context as to what they deal with, what are the pitfalls they have as it goes through it as well.
And if one of the things that you're struggling with are things like rotations, or, you know, there are sort of subbing maps and things you can use, especially if it's domestic, don't worry about winning the game. Like, I know that gets hard too, because, you know, some other parents or kids want to win or whatever. You know, kids do want to win, and they might get upset that they've lost, but I guarantee a quick trip to Macca's and they've forgotten about the game. So,
or Nando's if you can find
one. But that's what I mean. That's just so quickly out of their brain.
For sure.
That, you know, don't from a particularly domestic perspective, don't stress too much about that if you need to use a grading, map to, or a rotation map, to then just keep yourself at ease. It's one less thing you have to think of. Or if, you know, you don't have access to something like that, then, you know, as Rob said, grab another parent and put them in, or somebody that can help, and put them in charge of rotations. Yep. And it just gives you, again, another thing, because rotating athletes evenly, it sounds like it should be easy, and it's not, because of, you know, games stopping at different times and all that sort of stuff. So, take that. That's a really big thing in game, if that's some of the help that they need to take off your plate.
Or even if you are a parent coach with limited understanding of basketball, find a junior player within that club in like the under-18s type competition and say, hey, can you come and give me a chop out with this? And get them involved in coaching, because that is one of our next questions is, should I encourage my child to start coaching, and if so, when?
Yes.
And the answer is yes. Like, wholeheartedly yes.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. The sooner they can get involved and see it from a different lens of coaching, the better the player they become. And similarly, not that this was part of the question, I would also encourage them to go and do a refereeing course. Like, even if you don't become a referee at the end of it, go through it, work it out, see it from a different perspective as you go through it. It's all reps of being around the sport, but just seeing it from different angles. You'll learn different things about, oh, okay, that's why that's a travel, that's why that's called, that's what it looks like when that player won't listen to me over there as I'm trying to get them to do that. But yeah, frustrating, isn't it?
Story time.
Yep.
We had an athlete that came with their dad to a camp. So she was under 18s, and this was a younger, I think it was under 14s, an under 14 camp. And their dad had come, so she came with him. I said, jump on the court. She's like, oh, can I? I was like, yeah, like, jump on and coach. So she gets on there. We get to the first lunch break. How's it going? It is so annoying when they don't do what you ask. I was like, that is music to my ears.
Here's your accreditation.
But
one of us, one of us.
She goes, I never really got it where, you know, when coaches would get frustrated, or, you know, I always thought I was doing things, and now I sort of look at it and go, actually, no, I wasn't. And so it just unlocked something in her of how different it is when you are on the other side of it, and it actually makes you a better player, far better player. You are, from a communication perspective, from a patience perspective, but also from that, oh, I know how annoying it is when kids aren't listening, or when they roll in and just give a second sort of rate effort, and like, seeing that firsthand definitely makes them better players. So I would say, as quickly as possible when they're sort of old enough, always try and have a big enough gap in the age group. So, like, if you're under 16s, don't coach under 14s, coach like under 8s. Like, but always have somebody there with them as well to support them. Don't leave them on their own, because, you know, the things we're talking about that we've spoken about already and however long we've been going, imagine trying to deal with that as a child.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's got to be an adult there that's, you know, able to, you know, shield some things when necessary.
Same as the green whistle referee or the green shirt referees, right? There's always someone with them. Yeah. I think the same, same thing.
Well, I think it's because that was the biggest issue I had, I think, early on when I started coaching, which was like 14 or something like that, was how do I deal with the kids that are just mucking around? And I had no idea. And I looked at the sideline, there'd be no parents. It's like, well, now it's on me to try and discipline this, but I'm only like 3 to 4 years older than some of these kids. this is going to be hard. So having a parent that would always stick around at training, and that's what we eventually got to. It's like, hey, can we just roster on a parent that I'm happy to still coach them and train them and all that sort of stuff, but can we just have one parent at training so that if it does start to get a little bit unruly, they can jump in as the adult and not just the other teenager that happens to be in the gym with them at the time, which is not the solution. So I would encourage them to jump on. If you can get them in as an assistant coach first so they can get a little bit of a feel for what it is and how it's going to look, that'd be a great way to do it. But if they want to jump in boots and all to their own team, get them into a course as soon as you possibly can. We'll load them up with some networking stuff that they can do in the meantime. They can get a little bit of an understanding on that side of things. But
or if they're not sure and they want to sort of just dip their toes in it, you know, we can get in touch with us. We can get them involved in things like camps or, you know,
with a support
jamborees or, you know, those sort of things that aren't week on week on week, sort of over in a short amount of time. And yeah, the support's there as well.
Just about every association has a camp of their own, like a, what do they call it? A domestic camp, I guess, that they need help with all the time. So contacting your association, they'll find you something as
or
well.
Or Aussie Hoops or something
like
that.
Great way to get involved. Yeah. And brilliant way to start building their communication skills because they'll have to give and take feedback on what it's going to be. They'll have to problem solve on the fly. Like straight away, they're going to have to work some things out where, oh, this drill's going to work, this drill doesn't work. Two of my players are put out of practice. Now I don't really know what I'm going to do. Adapt. And that's a great skill to have, I think, for coaches and especially young people. When it doesn't quite go how you want it to go, what are you going to do next? So I think that's a really good thing to be doing. So as soon as they show a little bit of an interest, throw them in there and just provide some support around them to be able to get to that. We've actually got like six or seven more questions that I've really kind of got to get through and we are running out of time to get those done. So we'll move on to the next part of the podcast and we'll come back to those another time.
I have many leather-bound books and my apartment smells of rich mahogany.
It's been a while since we've had a book club.
That is an opener.
Oh, you're happy with that one?
That is an opener.
It's good to know we've got rankings. But the book club this week comes from Jeff Ward, who sent this one through. So I haven't read this yet. So Transforming Basketball by Alex Sarama. So in my journey thus far, I've been drawn into the basketball immersion world of Chris Oliver and then further deep dove into Transforming Basketball. Long lines, traditional drills are out the window with Transforming. Learning how to play this beautiful game and develop players is at the forefront of the book. So it's not so much a how-to with drills, although there are some in there, but rather a different way of thinking how to design your own drills based on how the game itself is played. So it is very small-sided games with purpose relative to your own team. I've really loved experimenting with my own team, things that may or may not work with a big eye on fun as well as fundamentals. I'd love to hear everyone's thoughts on the book and how this approach can assist so many coaches around Australia, both in domestic and representative ball. So brilliant submission on that one. I actually haven't read it, so I'm zero help as to what this is, but I do believe in what Alex is doing in that sort of space in particular with constraints-led approach, small-sided games, the enjoyment in basketball. I am a big proponent of that, and you would see the drills that go up on Talking Split that none of them are on air. There's always offense and defense and those sorts of things. So I am a big believer in that. So, Jeff, thank you very much for sending that in. A reminder, if you do have any book recommendations, you are more than welcome to send that through and we'll, similar to what Jeff's done there, we'll read them out and just sort of build out that book club a little bit more. One more thing to get through on the pod.
Something to post on Facebook. Let's go.
It's like me on Twitter.
And this was another clip sent through to me. I had a little bit of time on this one, so it was a little bit more polished as we go through it.
You see so many people that train youth athletes like they're pros. They're not pros. They haven't reached their full height yet. They're going to school 8 hours a day. They're dealing with stress of their parents and their friends. I work with pro athletes. They might practice sometimes 2 hours a day. They have the entire day free after that. And yet they're playing less games and practicing less than we have 14-year-olds in this country playing. And then we have a bunch of performance centers that try and monetize that, and they bring them into the gym. And there's a gym right in my area where they might have 14-year-old girls do 8 different lower body exercises and then send them off to practice. Why the hell would they need to do that much volume yet? They haven't earned that right, number one. And number two, they have to go practice. And what good are they after you just absolutely annihilated them in the gym? So you have to give them the minimum effective dose.
Nick Mihai just punching the air over on the side. But I mean, it's valid. Like, we deal with, that's obviously an American clip, but we deal with that here as well, where there's just the workload and the spike. And honestly, you cannot discount the physical and mental toll that 8 hours of school can have on kids. Like, I always thought my Sunday morning training sessions were my better sessions because they are coming in largely fresh, whereas in the midweek you get them in all sorts of states depending on what's been going on. So it is just a little bit of a nod to just be mindful as to how much they're doing. Have a little bit of a chat with them. Look, are you run down? Are you fatigued? Is there anything we can do? Do you need a night off? Those sorts of things. But being very careful because, and look, if you want to go back and listen to the podcast with Darren McInnes about, you know, how to get, you know, S&C into your players, there's ways to do that for sure. But just be a little careful. We don't want to be breaking kids, in particular now. They've come off a break. Sport is back and it's very much back. Be very careful, especially as other sports are starting to come into their lives again, like basketball season, like the actual season itself is not far away from tipping off. Footy season will be around the corner before we know it. And starting up again, workload's going to go up with a lot of our kids that are multi-sport kids. Netball is usually all year round, those sorts of things. So just be a little bit careful about how much we're doing. You know, do our kids really need to be physically fit as junior athletes and do designated fitness sessions? Probably not. They usually just get fit by doing more stuff. So be careful about how you manage that, I think, is the big message on that one. Zoe, Nick, thank you very much for jumping in this week.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Coaches, welcome. Good luck on the weekend, and we'll catch everyone back next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.